Welcome to Onc Live On Air. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Vishal A. Patel, MD, FAAD, FACMS, about the FDA approval of adjuvant cemiplimab for the treatment of patients with high-risk cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Patel discussed the clinical relevance of this approval, key details about the pivotal Phase 3 CPOS trial, and the safety profile of cemiplimab in patients with CSCC.
We've seen a real rapid shift in the treatment approach for advanced high-risk cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma. You know, historically, we haven't had very strong, durable treatment options. And what I mean by that is that standard of care of surgery and radiation would work for a high number of patients, but in the very advanced or the high-risk subgroup, many of these tumors would still recur and then would have really bad outcomes after that point. And so with the advent of immunotherapy, we certainly changed the trajectory of those patients that were no longer candidates for surgery and radiation. But we always want to avoid the worst outcomes in patients if we possibly can. And so as immunotherapy has evolved, just like with melanoma, and considering utilizing it early in the patient's journey, we want to show that has a significant impact on the patients if we do that, and balance that with the risk of toxicity. And so this is, you know, really a culmination of like 8 years of work to focus in on the highest risk patients who have the poorest outcomes when their tumor does recur. Rationale study goes back to actually almost a decade ago, where we had a study that was run out of Australia looking at whether adding chemotherapy to surgery and radiation would impact patients' risk of recurrence and death or event-free survival. And there was not a benefit of adding chemotherapy shown in that trial. That was the post-trial. But that's at the stage of considering, well, if we swap out chemotherapy for immunotherapy and taking a page out of the book of melanoma, where we know adjuvant immunotherapy has a recurrence-free survival benefit and became the approval for high-risk melanoma, we wanted to consider that as well in high-risk squamous cell carcinoma patients. Now, an interesting and kind of, I wouldn't say controversial topic is the question of whether it is beneficial to give patients immunotherapy in the adjuvant setting or wait for those that do recur and then give them immunotherapy as a metastatic or salvage setting who are no longer resectable. And it's a challenging question to answer to balance the toxicity as well as the benefit. And the best way to answer that and to provide a rationale under how you might consider that for your patients is a clinical trial and a very robust, strong, structured clinical trial, which is what CPOS was. And that's why it took such a long time to complete the trial and get the data. And what I mean by that is we really focused in on that very high-risk subgroup, those patients that have really bad regional metastases, lymph node disease with high-risk features, those that are not regionally metastatic, but have very high-risk primary tumor features, the intranasal metastases or invasion of large, big nerves or bone invasion. And these are the patients that we worry about the most. And so there is a rationale to say, can we prevent a recurrence or a poor quality of life outcome by potentially offering a therapy earlier and upfront? Now, this has been a long process, 8 years. And during that 8 years or almost 10 years since inception, there has been changes to the field in terms of utilizing immunotherapy before surgery, not in the adjuvant setting. And it has been extremely robust and successful, that approach. And so the question has logically come up, which one do we consider, neoadjuvant or adjuvant? And again, it's complex, and it's complex as every patient is different, every clinical scenario is different. And what I will say is I'm really pleased to have this, not because it's the end-all, be-all approach that we should consider, but it gives our patients options, especially if we're surprised, we do surgery thinking that we're going to have a good outcome, And then find out that the patient is riskier than we anticipated, or the patient after undergoing, you know, surgery and potentially radiation, there are other considerations we have where we are worried and we want to offer a therapy to prevent recurrence. Well, now we have really strong data to rely on to make that decision if that clinical situation fits right. So I think this has provided us with that kind of robust decision-making capacity. Important point for the study design is, again, this is adjuvant therapy that's given after surgery and radiation. So all patients need to undergo surgery and then complete radiation, specifically radiation within a relatively short window time point, meaning you're having radiation after the surgery, not waiting months to have the radiation. You're completing that as an upfront treatment surgery, and you've healed from the surgery and you receive the radiation, and then asking the question. And that's the gold standard therapy that we consider for these high-risk tumors, adding the radiation as an adjuvant. And we know that despite doing that, as I discussed earlier, still a high number of patients, 30-40%, are going to recur in those that have the highest risk features. So the design was then a randomized and placebo-controlled trial to randomize patients either get placebo or cemiplimab therapy, and then so we can really compare apples to apples and see if there is a benefit. And that speaks to the strict, structured design of the trial, and also further strengthens kind of what we can take from it, the conclusions we can take from it, and gives us more excitement when we see that impressive response of the risk reduction, a 68% risk reduction by giving patients cemiplimab when compared to placebo. That has a reduction of 0.32 is kind of as good as it gets in the adjuvant immunotherapy world as we compare that to melanoma, where there is an approval. So it exceeds that. So that design helps us answer that question, and that question was answered with a resounding yes. The disease-free survival data, as we noted, is really impressive, but it's impressive not just for regional disease recurrence, also for distant metastases and distant recurrence. So it extends to both of those potential scenarios with an impressive hazard ratio in both of them, 0.2 and I think 0.35 for distant, 0.2 for regional, if I recall off the top of my head. And so that's impressive as well, that it benefits not only regionally, because squamous cell carcinoma tends to be a regional disease, but there is a small subset who have distant metastases. And now the, you know, the question is ultimately going to become, is there an overall survival benefit? But that needs to be looked at and taken through a very important lens, which is that this disease, squamous cell carcinoma, is different than melanoma. The patients are older. The patients, when they do recur, may recur later in their life, where it is very difficult to deal with the recurrence and potential options at that time point. Is the endpoint we're going to consider overall survival? Is it quality of life impact? Is it just prevention of the recurrence so that at the later life, when they are more frail and have less reserve, we don't have to be as aggressive in therapy? So that's some of the questions we're going to think about and the lens to look at the long-term data through. The safety profile, there's no new signals for the safety profile. It's what we see and expect with immunotherapy, and specifically cemiplimab. And in fact, patients were able to tolerate it in the adjuvant setting. Only 10% of patients requiring discontinuation due to adverse events, and 22% had a interruption in their treatment, but able to restart then. And the treatment period is slightly different than we consider the metastatic treatment, right? There's a finite amount of time that was designed through the trial for therapy. And so patients are able to tolerate that and have an endpoint in mind, as opposed to in the salvage setting where we're considering, are we continuing to keep going to prevent a recurrence happening, or what that endpoint is. So slightly different, and that helps address that question. Is it better in the adjuvant versus not? And I think, again, different for every patient, every clinical scenario. There's two big pieces that I take from this. First, when people see this and will think about high risk and what that definition is, I think I urge you to really understand the clinical trial design, understand what the inclusion criteria, what denotes high risk for these patients. It is a very specific number of risk features where we had that benefit, both extranodal and nodal risk features. So that's important not to apply it necessarily widely, since the definition of high risk is relatively broad and not well-defined. Second, we'll look at this through the lens of some of the off-label neoadjuvant types of studies and approaches that people are taking and question which is better. And I don't think this is a question of which is better. It's more of a question of giving options to patients and clinicians, understanding that you may consider one approach for a patient that comes to you, or in many scenarios, the patient may not have been offered that as an option, that they had surgery already, they thought that was the best option, then found, as I said, riskier features required radiation surgery and still were very concerned about them having a recurrence. Well, now it gives me comfort to know if somebody, you know, didn't have an opportunity to have a full discussion with them before a treatment was made, we now have a approved indication to kind of have good outcomes for our patients.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.
Absolutely.